Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. And it is Wednesday morning. Wednesday morning? Yes.
Wednesday,
let's check the calendar.
Yes.
Wednesday. Good morning. I got thrown off because Mike was here. That's what normally would be Tuesday. And then, I don't know.
Tuesday so, must be Maury. I don't know.
That's right. Mike Spain is with us. He's the associate editor of the Times Union. And it's a delight when he graces us with his presence.
Mike,
and
thank you.
We are
happy to be here.
Thrilled to have him with us. Rosemary Armeo is a journalism professor at the University of Albany. She's an investigative reporter. And she is a wonderful person, and we are having her here. Thank you very much for being with us.
He is effusive this morning.
Oh,
I think it's this diet he's on.
Let me know what you're eating. I'd like some of that.
Yes, well, there's not much of it, so I'm not sharing. I'll tell you that. And Alan Shartok is with us. Alan, you're doing very well.
I'm on the same diet you are.
I know. You had a cookie issue this morning, but you're getting
over
it.
I came in. It's very early in the morning. It's like 4:30 in the morning. I saw the Girl Scout cookies, which I had given Ray money for, but said, keep them away from me. Put them out there.
See, this is Alan's MO. He's very nice. He buys cookies for the entire newsroom, which is, for the whole staff.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful, nice gesture.
Yeah. Which means exactly the opposite, right? How could
I know it's
you're
very
dirty
nice.
Rat,
no,
you're,
I've always said it's very
us.
Nice. When let's put it this way: last year, when I wasn't on the plan, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Now it's an attractive nuisance, right?
2 points for each of those cookies.
Oh, they're worth it, though.
Four points, you could have a steak.
And you know what?
Which ones do you like the best when you're eating Girl Scout cookies?
Oh, thin mints.
Yeah, thin mints.
Thin mints are always hot.
And a whole sleeve at a time.
I'm a Samoa.
What's the one with the peanut butter in the middle?
With the chocolate over it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
We've just
that's
done
the
a commercial for Girl Scouts. Oh,
well,
my
hey,
gosh.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, you're doing it for the Girl Scouts. You're doing it for the Scouts.
Where does that money go? To scouting, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
To their programs.
Somebody told me there was a report in Colorado where they set up a table outside one of the marijuana dispensaries to sell Girl Scout cookies.
That's pretty good entrepreneurial spirit, and get the munchies.
Right. Get the munchies and go on the cookie. I like it.
Go on the cookie.
Right. Okay, welcome to the discussion. We certainly invite you to be a part of it. Roundtable@wamc.org. Okay, let us begin by talking about the mystery that is the Malaysian Airlines jet. We still don't really know what's going on. There are radar blips now. Officials are struggling to interpret radar signals showing what could be the missing Malaysian jet veering off course and hundreds of miles away from its last known position. The authorities in Malaysia acknowledged Wednesday that they detected radar signals showing what could be the airliner, but they have failed to disclose the data for 4 days, even as they struggled to interpret it. Officials said that they had given the radar data to American investigators who would assist in helping determine whether the radar blips were likely to have come from the Boeing 777. The question I had is what else would cause those radar blips?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what.
There's so much that we don't know. I mean, it's surprising. We thought that there would be easy information. You know, they'd have GPS tracking of all this, and you know, there would be satellite photos of it going down and all that kind of stuff. But it just shows you how vast the oceans are, and you know.
Joel Achenbach of the Washington Post had a wonderful piece along that line that we're not supposed to have these kind of mysteries anymore.
Right.
The whole world is mapped and charted and under surveillance.
Exactly.
And this is a huge, gigantic, technologically advanced piece of equipment. How could it have happened? But I have to say, is this wrong to say? I am so sick of this story right now because there's no new developments.
I'm with you.
I think it's – I didn't watch it. You know, I was like you, watching every minute. CNN in the background waiting for developments. But we're at a point now where there's no more information. I'm not even sure what we're going to say
morning. Well, here are the things that I find interesting in watching it. I agree with you because and watching the press as a whole, and especially the news networks, the 24-hour news networks, struggle with a story that has no new information for, 6 days now?
Right. And a big appetite for new information.
Absolutely. And they reach for anything except for the Vietnamese guys who saw the fireball allegedly in the sky.
Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah. I did not hear
that. Well, that's this morning. There's a Vietnamese platform worker, apparently, who looked up to the east and saw a plane on fire, he said. And now everybody's rushing to see that.
Well, I do know that last night on Piers Morgan, and by the way, I just want to go on the record.
So glad he's going.
I'm really going to miss that show.
Gah.
Meaning not.
did you see how Chelsea Handler was on the show? And
she was so
him.
Great.
She goes, you don't pay attention for 10 minutes to your guests. You're just the worst interviewer.
And you text, and it's certainly no mystery why you're out of a job.
Yeah.
And I was like, Chelsea Handler.
And the little jerk responds by saying, well, you know, it's just the company. You just didn't keep my interest. Oh, my God. Journalism 101, Piers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
So I was watching the we're allowed to have this.
Sure.
So I was watching the CNN coverage last night, and I'm Piers Morgan. You were talking about how they were going. Alan was saying they would go after whoever they could get to talk to, and apparently one of the pilots had been admonished in the past for having guests, women apparently, come into the cockpit during flights. So they're exclusive. What was that, Alan?
I said mile high.
They're exclusive. their exclusive last night was to speak to the woman who the pilot was with. The time that he got in trouble for.
They're ridiculous. This is why I say it's time to let the story just go for a while until you have real information.
I think the fascinating part is how a story gets covered when there's nothing new, and how these incidental, tangential things become major exclusives. And it speaks to the sort of nature of the news media and how hungry they are to report anything, however insignificant it may be, when they have no news.
And you can put this on the record. I will, however, give Anderson Cooper credit.
That was a gagging sound you heard.
That was a gagging sound. I think.
No. I really do give him credit. I'm not a big Anderson Cooper fan, but I give him enormous credit, because last night he spent the last 10-12 minutes of his newscast talking about the family members and what they were going through, and it was, to me, one of the most compelling things, because he was bringing them through the day of the type of notifications that they would get that would bring them into the hotel, into the banquet room. They weren't telling them. They'll say, "We'll tell you information tomorrow." He wove that
nice
in with a story about
the
Malaysian government and how they were providing and not providing information, and saying, "Well, we have information, but we're not going to tell you." And the just how upset the people were getting. And I thought, well, okay, if you're going to, like, I would have led with that. You know, that's all you have. That's really good, compelling stuff.
I would say that there's one other story, a sidebar, if you will, that could have come out of that. And that's the story of human trafficking. The two false passports, which turn out not to be linked probably to terrorism, do tell a great story. One of the young men was a 20-year-old Iranian kid trying to get to Germany to get asylum. A lot of that goes on. There's a thriving business in third world countries in counterfeit documents. That's a story that the world's media could be working on while they wait for real details on the
plane.
Well,
you do know that story. I mean, it's remarkable how much we know about the people who had who used somebody else's passports to get on that plane, and what you just said. I mean, that is remarkable.
The other thing that the news that I guess that came out of yesterday is Interpol came out and said that they don't see any connection to terrorism.
Correct.
And then the CIA came out and said,
"We can't rule it out.
We're not ruling that out yet." And I thought that was interesting. Although their argument is simply, we can't rule anything out until we know what happened.
Yeah, and you know, the CIA may be checking further sources, like maybe Congress, to find out what they can.
Transition.
That's a very good point. I was going to make the same point, because it turns out that they really are in trouble now. And they
out
should
of control.
Be,
and
they should be.
Be
in trouble. Yep. If we have a democracy, you know, the idea that the overseers would be spied upon. The congressional overseers would be spied upon by the CIA is really outrageous.
Well,
that
seems like a perfect segue to me. So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Dianne Feinstein. We'll talk about all of that good stuff.
Oh, goody.
And we'll be right back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany Institute of History and Art. GE presents The Mystery of the Albany Mummies, using ancient artifacts and modern technologies to uncover secrets of the museum's mummies, through June 8th, albanyinstitute.org. Homebrew Emporium in North Greenbush, West Boylston, South Weymouth, and Cambridge, offering beer, wine, and cheesemaking equipment and supplies, tea, herbs, and more. And Indian Mountain School, Lakeville, Connecticut, an independent co-educational junior boarding and day school for students from pre-kindergarten through grade 9. IndianMountain.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. And we have Mike Spain, Rosemary Mayo, and Alan Chartok on the panel this morning. We welcome your comments as always. As we mentioned, just going into going into the break and in the last segment, we want to talk a little bit about the CIA and the conflict now that is coming in. There is I believe the term that is used in the Times this morning is fester. A festering conflict between the CIA and its congressional overseers broke into the open Tuesday when Senator Dianne Feinstein, chairwoman of the Intelligence Committee and one of the CIA's staunchest defenders, delivered an extraordinary denunciation of the agency, accusing it of withholding information about its treatment of prisoners and trying to intimidate committee staff members investigating the detention program. Describing what she called a defining moment for the oversight of American spy agencies, Ms. Feinstein said that the CIA had removed documents from computers used by Senate Intelligence Committee staff members working on a report about the agency's detention program, searched the computers after the committee completed its report, and referred a criminal case to the Justice Department in an attempt to thwart their investigation. And there's a 6,300-page report that has been at the center of a bitter dispute between the committee and the agency.
Could you explain that thwarting business again, turning it over to the Justice Department?
Meaning the actual of what they want?
In other words, who turned over the information, the complaint to the Justice Department? The CIA did?
Ms. Feinstein's disclosures came a week after it was first reported that the CIA last year had monitored computers used by her staff in an effort to learn how the committee may have gained access to the agency's own internal review of the detention and interrogation program that became perhaps the most criticized part of the American government's response to the September 11, 2001 attacks.
Yes.
Feinstein said that the internal review bolstered the conclusions of the committee's still classified report on the program, which President Obama officially ended in 2009, in January of 2009, after criticizing it during the presidential campaign. So the question, you know, when we say festering, so this has been going on for over a decade.
This goes back to 2000. I mean, specifically, this report goes back to 2009 when Leon Panetta was head of the CIA. And Dianne Feinstein's committee was trying to get details, and they had this big fight over access. So the CIA set up a computer network within up in Langley, and I guess congressional aides or Senate aides had to go up and view these 6,300 records. It was like a document dump, you know, like they do so much. They give you so much that you can't even, work your way through it. It's a technique a lot of agencies use. And they were on the separate computer system going through it, and they began to notice that sometimes some of the work they had done and compilations they had done on the separate system had deletions. This is what Senate staffer said. So that sort of began this whole back and forth. And now Panetta's gone, and there's supposed to be this report that's supposed to come out, and
part of the reason that Panetta's gone?
No, I think he retired. But
why did he retire?
Well, you know, to spend more time with his family and to pursue other interests. Why not?
Why else would he retire?
He also had a farm in California.
Maybe he saw the truck coming down the road.
Well, there's probably a lot of other things coming down.
Okay, here's what I want to say about this, now that we've kind of laid out what happened. This is another really bad move by Mr. Obama, who you continue to defend, Alan.
Indeed.
He has, he has taken a huge hit because he's defending a justification for torture. That's not his. It's from the Bush administration. Yet he's not pursued that or prosecuted anybody for that. And now, according to the CIA, which has refused to apologize for this breach at Feinstein's insistence. Instead, they've said the White House ordered us to do this. If the White House ordered this report taken off of those computers, what a stupid move, because on that committee sit two of the staunchest defenders of Obama policy, and they are now alienated.
Bipartisan, yeah.
Bipartisan, Lindsey and Feinstein. And he's managed to piss them both off with this really stupid move. The New York Times has called for the committee to, I know I used the bad, the P word, and I shouldn't, but I'm mad about this. It's really bad. This is like the NSA. It's,
don't do it again.
Feinstein, who defended the NSA for surveilling us, the public. Now she's got a taste of her own medicine. She's demanding an apology.
I think what she did yesterday was extraordinary. It was really I have great respect.
That's because she's the P word too, and that's why she did it, not because it's some great move. This is really bad.
And there's something else here, which is, what is this really all about? I mean, if the agencies are running the Congress, that's different than if the Congress is overseeing the agencies.
Right.
And
that's
what implications.
She had a 45-minute press conference yesterday and basically came back to the same thing. Why are you looking over our shoulder? Why are you spying on us? Why are you looking at this? And if you're not, then give us the information.
The New York Times has the best solution, I think. They editorialize that she just should release everything, their whole report and the Panetta report, which they do, despite having the CIA trying to get rid of it. They have a paper copy of it. Go back to the old technology. They took
scan
a paper copy,
scan it in,
and post the thing.
So what's really going on here? I mean, post 9/11, a time when we knew very little, there was presidents calling Pakistan saying you're either with us or you're against us, and Bush. And now we say, okay, the future of the world may be at stake. And they say misguidedly, we're going to torture people. That's all. We're going to put them underwater. We're going to hold them underwater and do all of this kind of stuff. And we did it. There's no two ways about it. And the last thing they want to do is have somebody remind them that we did it. Too bad.
Yeah.
The CIA had carried out the search to determine whether committee investigators may have gained unauthorized access to the internal review of the detention program that the agency had carried out without informing the committee. And Ms. Feinstein on Tuesday vigorously disputed this allegation, saying the document had been included intentionally or not as part of a dump of millions of pages the CIA had provided for the intelligence committee.
Correct. I'd also like to point out that I don't see Feinstein, who I generally admire, although I think her stand on surveillance is crazy. She's not the hero of this. The heroine of this is an intern from McClatchy News who first broke the story last week. And that's why she's responding in public.
So this dispute, this festering dispute, has been going on for some time. But when it became public, she felt she had to respond. What's interesting, too, is what you pointed out, that Senator Lindsey Graham is backing Feinstein on this. And that's quite a show of of bipartisan solidarity. And it has come.
I mean, it's not just Chuck and Lamar. There's other senators getting along. That's good.
Wow. Yeah,
but I want to take some issue, if I may, with
Rosemary. You have 20 seconds to take issue.
And that is that the intern may have found it. But in fact, it takes some real guts for Feinstein to turn around and do what she's doing right now. So she is a hero.
All right. While we mull that over, we're going to take a break, and we'll the looks that are going on in the studio at the moment. That's great. go to the webcam, WAMC.org. Also, feel free to get in online and tell us what you think. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll get the latest from NPR News, and then we'll be back with our roundtable panel again. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel and our discussion this morning. Let me introduce the panel to you. We have Dr. Alan Chartok here. Good morning, Alan.
Yo.
Rosemary Romeo, who is a professor, a journalism professor at the State University of New York at Albany.
Hello.
If you say that wrong, they get mad at you. I know we said SUNY.
They do?
Well, we said SUNY Albany a lot.
I say SUNY at Albany whenever I have to act like I'm from someplace important. I do. Is that bad to say?
No, I don't think so.
They don't recognize you,
I
Albany.
I've been there a long time, yeah.
In Eastern Europe, they ask if I'm from Albania.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper.
Also known as the TU.
The TU, right. Right here in the capital region and beyond. So we welcome you all to the panel. Mike, you have some interesting stories making news. We've been talking throughout our region about casinos and proposals that are rearing their heads throughout the seven states that we cover. And there's one more to add to that list, I guess.
Well, you know, Schenectady has been talking about redeveloping a wide open area that used to be where American Locomotive Company was located. It's prime because it's right on the Mohawk River. It's close to downtown. It's close to the beautiful stockade. And as they get ready to, like, as the developers, the Galesi Group, gets ready to detail this for the city council and start the whole process of talking about condos and docks for big boats and all kinds of mixed use and grocery stores for this wide open area. Apparently, one of the new wrinkles is it's going to likely include discussion of a possible casino. And that's kind of odd. Paul Nelson, our reporter who covers Schenectady, has details today about that big project, which has condos and everything and a hotel. And now they're talking about putting a casino there, and it's likely to cause a big controversy. Already some public officials have spoken out against that notion in Schenectady. It's turning into what happened, could turn into what happened in Saratoga Springs, where virtually everybody on the city council, the mayor, and lots of citizens don't want a casino there.
And it still may be shoved down their throats.
And it can, because the state constitutional amendment that was approved by the voters without the support of Saratoga County and Saratoga Springs does allow the state to override local concerns.
Well, that's just disgusting.
Yeah. But they are supposed to take into consideration local concerns, and they're supposed to cite the casino with the primary goal of helping the economy, which would make more sense in Schenectady, which has a more sagging economy than Saratoga. Of course, the other site in the region that is being talked about is the city of Rensselaer, and it's Rensselaer County, and those
also in need of some help.
Right, and those communities did vote for the constitutional amendment, so you would assume there's support there, and there's even talk of putting it on the edge of the city of Albany in the town of Colony off I-90 at an old First Prize
meatpacking plant.
The I-90.
But as that talk goes on, you know, this huge project for downtown Schenectady is finally coming together. And it just seems like this is a distraction that could interfere with it. I just don't get it.
Well, it seems to me the possibility is that, A, it engenders discussion. Schenectady, it shows that it gets into the mix. But what I really think is going on is that there's going to be a competition, but among cities that are hurting, that's where they're going. They're going into Springfield. They're going into places like that. Schenectady is right on the cusp, I think. I think there's some great things happening in Schenectady, Proctor's and all the rest. And then I think there's some endangered areas also that are in need of some help. And so you can almost predict that the places which need the help are more likely to get the casinos than the ones that don't. Saratoga doesn't want it.
Yeah, and I should mention there's another newer player in this, and it's right off of the thruway near the city of Amsterdam, which is another area that's
another
economically
area.
Suffering, right. And it would create jobs. But the problem with the whole this issue is, what would it be? Would it be something that would fit in with an urban area, and that's what they want this to be in Schenectady, a nice new urban lifestyle? Or is it something that would be a destination that you would get off the thruway exit, go in and gamble and
have you ever been in one, Mike?
In casinos, yeah.
Yeah, sure. And they're sort of depressing places, at least my sample of one that I've been in.
Which you one know, were you in, Turning Stone? Or,
no, in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And on an Indian reservation, and Roselle and I went in, and there were these miles of, slot machines, and about three ladies sitting there throwing coins into it of these miles of machines. It was kind of depressing.
Well, that's the question. Is it just going to be a destination for people to go in and come out?
Like
or
you
is
said.
It going to be a crowd will come there and then spill into the community and spend a lot of extra money. I don't know. That,
but that's
Saratoga
never really,
seem
and
like
it's never really happened. I mean, it certainly hasn't happened in Atlantic City, which they thought would happen.
Well, that's for sure. And the other thing too is that I don't know. I just want to make sure I have your problem right of just seeing like three people in the whole casino.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even equally depressing is to see a place that is filled to the rafters with those people, with people who
maybe
are,
we were there at the wrong
putting,
time.
No, but what I'm saying is that you know where there's that mindset where people come in at 9 a.m. Yeah. They leave at 7 p.m. and that is their day.
They don't
day.
Go to the restaurants.
You know, that's the day.
And, right.
I like casinos. I've been to them in many places in the country. In Colorado, they've done a great job providing jobs and restoring old mining communities by putting casinos back in. So the disturbing thing, and the disturbing thing, however,
did you ever win at one of those casinos in those one of those mining towns in Colorado?
A little bit. Yes. I have to be careful because I could be one of those people. You know,
the IRS
like,
is listening.
Every time I've went into one of those things, they're like, oh. How cute, how quaint, and then you just feel like, all right, I'm just putting my money into a machine that does nothing.
Well, I going back to what Alan said, if there's only three little old ladies in front of slot machines at
they
these
casinos.
They were
little, by the way.
an older demographic in front of a slot machine, that's not going to bring economic development to any of these communities.
Suddenly Alan realized it was one group that he hadn't offended. Oh, I have to take them off the list now. Check that off. All right.
Well, it is true. It is amazing to me that these places, which indeed I like, are now seen as the savior, that this is how we're going to save our economic development.
But what's the saturation point?
Factories seem better investments, I don't know.
If there's only three delightful women sitting in front of the slot machines.
I just meant they weren't.
They're not
tiny.
Close to saturation, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
like shopping malls, though. They made money, so we built them like every other block, and now they're all shutting down. And we do run the risk, I think, of doing that with casinos. How many does the state need?
Right. And how many gambling opportunities? Because, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that we, I mean, not only are we doing this, but we're increasing the lottery, we're increasing racetracks and other venues. Online is still a big thing. So a big question mark as well of wagering online. So yeah, it's an interesting thing to consider. Real quick, Mike, before we go to break, can we talk about the heroin story as well that came out of Albany Pharmacy yesterday? I found that to be fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, this was essentially a story about last night there was a forum at the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Science, and Craig Apple, who is the sheriff of Albany County, spoke at the forum, talking about how cheaper, pure, easy heroin that is cheaper and more pure is easier to get, and it's paralyzing the communities across the country. And the anecdote that Brian Fitzgerald, our reporter, uses is that last week in Albany County alone, there was a prostitution ring busted in Colony, and heroin was a key component of that, of keeping the woman who was the victim held in basically as a sex slave to keep her there. There was also a stabbing in Voorheesville, which is a tranquil, rural town in Albany County, and 1,000 bags of heroin was picked up in several suburbs in raids. And people at this conference last night, about 200 people came to it, talked about how heroin is readily available. There was a young woman who was addicted at age 15, and she was saying that she turned to heroin because she was unable to get get prescription drugs out of her mother's medicine cabinet anymore, and it was
available.
Yeah,
that's huge, by the way, the idea that heroin is preferable to the OxyContin.
It's cheaper and easier to get, and that's what all these people are saying, and it's crippling the community. Hope House, the organization that treats drug addicts in the capital region, has expanded the number of beds it has for heroin addiction, which is pretty sad. It's great that they can do it. Their executive director said they want to meet the need, but it's sad that they have to and that the need is there. I mean, these are people in their 20s and 30s who are getting addicted to heroin, which is we know how devastating that drug was in the, 60s and 70s, and it kind of went out of fashion, and now it's available.
And it gets to be cyclical.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating stories, and you can find out more information by going to the Times Union. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this short word.
Support for WAMC comes from University at Albany, offering a weekend MBA program for 22 months, including a study abroad session, 518-956-8330. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York. Purchasing estate jewelry, coins, silver, fine arts and collections, sponsor of Antiques Roadshow, marklawson.com. And Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Local and imported cheeses, prepared foods, specialty groceries, houseplants, seed starting supplies, bird seed, and more, adamsfarms.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable, and we are continuing our discussion. Let us go to perhaps one of the biggest interviews to hit the internet in the last several months, and that is the President of the United States as a guest on the Zach Galifianakis program Between the Ferns, which is on the Funny or Die website. So yesterday, this particular interview that Zach Galifianakis did with it's a mock interview show, and he did it with President Obama. It was taped about 2 weeks ago, and what the president, of course, is plugging is the Affordable Care Act, and specifically for young people, and specifically the March 31st deadline. So according to sources, that 19,000 viewers of the video had continued on to the healthcare.gov site, because there's a direct link on the video, and it's unclear just how big of a success story that really is. For instance, as a five, the interview boasted nearly 6 million views. So the question is, you know, a lot of it is obviously just interest, and it's making news and people are looking at it, but 20,000, let's say 20,000 people who are going to the site as a result, obviously that's a good thing. Critics are saying that it is very unpresidential. Critics are saying that it's not the right place for the president to bring his message, especially when there are other much more concerning issues going on. But I have to say, after viewing it, I enjoyed it and thought it was a win for all parties involved.
Yeah. me too. You know, we used to have an assistant principal at Monument High School, Kate McDermott. I loved her. And she went to Our Lady of the Elms College, and she would walk around and talk to classes, and she would say, and she would hand out applications to the college. People would apply. They got a lot of people going there for that reason, because somebody just simply said, "This is a good idea. Why don't you do it?" And we certainly know that it's a good idea to have the more people signing up, particularly young people, so that they can balance out what we old people spend in healthcare. It's a good thing, and therefore, you know, the ends justify the means, and I think it was great.
Right. I think it's unpresidential to tell your CIA to spy on Congress, not to go on a show that has an audience of young people that don't normally listen to those traditional news places that the president could speak at. It was a brilliant spiel. It really is very funny. And Obama has done some of his best work in comedic settings.
Jimmy Fallon.
The White House correspondence dinners, or he's been hysterical on that, diffused the birth issue at one of those. He's pretty funny.
Well, it all began, Alan, you're the political scientist. Did it begin with Richard Nixon on Laugh-In when he said, "Sock it to me"?
I'll never forget it.
Right. And presidents and candidates have been going on Saturday Night Live. That's kind of standard now.
But look, I mean, even going back to Nixon and Kennedy going on to Jack Parr.
Jack Parr, yeah. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, you go where the people are.
I don't remember.
You go where the people are. What surprises me about this story is I never really was aware of funnierdie.com, and I wasn't aware of this between the
Well, your wife's about to change. Mr.
And
Spain.
I am just going to be tuning in
fan.
To Zach.
Yeah.
Zach Galifianakis?
Yes, Zach Galifianakis and his show, and I think it's hysterical.
So it's like a good relationship between consenting adults.
Here we go.
Everybody gets a little something out of it.
Well, what it's done for the president is it's brought new attention to the audience he's trying to reach, younger people who don't watch mainstream media or
lamestream
media.
No, infallible. That's part of the shtick, you know.
Right. And then it's also brought me and people like me who are out of the funnierdie.com demographic to that website. So it works both ways.
I just make three quick points. One is that I was telling you this earlier in the panel, but I was talking to my class last night. So this is a small sample size, 20 kids. But
same rows, decent kids.
But you ask these kids, you know, do you watch Fallon? Do you watch Kimmel? Do you watch Daily Show? Do you watch Colbert? Nobody. And I said, how many of you have seen a Funny or Die video? And every hand went up. And if that's the group that they're going after, then that's the right place to go. And we're talking about 30 million views and hits on this particular site, but in the past in some of the videos that have gone on viral. That's one. Second is the funniest moment to me was the stuff is a little stilted and it's it's edited poorly, which is part of the shtick. But the president with the microphone that is duct taped to his lapel. is one of the funniest things I've seen in a very, very long time. And meanwhile, the Boston Herald says today, giving the president very bad reviews, saying that proving the old adage that dying is easy, comedy is hard, the president deserves less than stellar reviews for a supposedly funny bit on Between Two Ferns.
Too bad for the editorial writers.
Yeah, I want to know how old he was.
Yeah, they got nothing to do. They say, what am I going to do for tomorrow? If I say something nice, everybody think I'm a patsy. If I say something mean, everybody will like me.
They say that the appearance is less presidential than Richard Nixon saying "Sock it to me" on Laugh-In, adding that he should not quit his day job. And the White House press corps grilled the president's press secretary about the skit yesterday, with ABC questioning whether the presidency had been damaged by the Fern Fest.
This is why traditional media is dying. Yeah. That's just really so old-fashioned.
It's hard to argue with you on that.
And here's the thing: if anything, forget the political motivations, forget that it was light, it was funny, it was, if you found it funny, great, if you didn't, that's fine.
Turn
it didn't hurt anybody.
A little self-deprecating humor by
it's
the president.
Just, and it wasn't inappropriate at any point.
No,
not at all. So. And so
four thumbs up on that?
I think we're all together on that one. Yeah.
Is there any way I could alienate anybody?
What Obama should learn from this is that he should start,
his own web series?
His own web series. He could do it right in the White House. But that was, to me, the funniest moment was the very end when it was revealed that this was done right at the White House in the room where he meets with ambassadors all the time.
The diplomat room. Yeah.
Yeah. You said, Joe, that your students don't watch any of the traditional shows, including Fallon and the younger people. How come?
I think they are of a culture where they can watch anything they want on YouTube. The next morning they can see what they want. It's a viral.
They don't do TV. They do small screen. And you're right. You can stream anything. They also don't watch it just because they find it themselves. It's usually referred by usually
a post
Twitter
on a Facebook
or something.
Page.
Firing Leno, therefore, to replace him with somebody younger doesn't work.
No.
How old is this group? 20?
Well, they're junior and senior. So they're 2021 and. But also, I mean, to your point, Alan, I think that what the hope was for replacing Leno with someone like Fallon is that Fallon is known and has a large Twitter following, has a large Facebook following, a large Instagram following, and that through that and doing bits that can go viral, that would increase their audience. So, yes, you have the ratings, but on top of that, you also have the exposure to the show.
The truth is that our rating systems is off. Nielsen measures who's watching a show when it's on. Well, we don't do that anymore. I mean, the VCR began to change that. Now it's almost complete. These kids are not going to watch it at a set time every day.
So meanwhile, just quick, after a million people signed up last month for private health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, federal officials said Tuesday, bringing the total to date to 4.2 million, believing the Obama administration well short of its original goal, with less
Which
than a month to go.
Which was a number we've used here a lot, and I've disputed it.
Well, so the real question is, are we going to punish the people who don't sign up?
White House officials predict a surge in signups just before the six-month enrollment period ends on March 31st, but it will be a challenge to make up for the slow start that resulted from technical problems.
Was their target deliberately low, and they've now hit 75% of that target, or was it
an honest target?
And I think 75% is pretty good.
Haven't we used the number here of 30 to 40 million people were going to be on health care who had not been?
Well, we said that there will be eligible.
Oh, now we're backing down.
Well, no.
On this program, we have deliberately said this is a great program because it will give health care to 40 million new people.
That's the difference between would and could.
Well, okay.
I think it's disappointing, and there's no way to whitewash that.
Okay, it's disappointing, but we still have a system that has that many people on it, which is an improvement, yes?
Yeah. More people are now registered for health care, getting health care in the United States than at any other time. That's correct.
In some states, like California, New York, and Connecticut, it's been really successful.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean,
the
places
they
didn't have
that
the rollout
cooperated.
Problem.
Yeah. They had state exchanges, is what happened.
The real issue is what's going to happen after the midterm elections. Are a lot of, you know, is the Senate going to go Republican? Is there going to be a whole new effort? Oh, my, hope not.
Yeah. Well, there will be. If they win everything, there will be.
Yeah.
And as you saw Florida last night, it's worth mentioning. That highly contested seat, although there were more Republicans. I don't know what everybody's making out of this.
Obama won that district, though, in the last election.
Yeah, so, but it was a very close election. It was a very close election. We're talking about
It's important to recognize that the Democrat also hurt herself. I mean, she was the head of a bank that was laying people off while she was getting bonuses, and that was part of the attack ad. So it wasn't all about Obamacare, but it is interesting.
No, but those you make a great point, Mike. Those congressional elections, the local elections, quite frequently don't reflect on national policy, but on who these two people are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here locally, Paul Tonka has a new
You say Tonka, it's Tonko.
Tonko, sorry.
Tonka's the truck.
Tonka's the truck. Yeah, I had three boys. What can I tell you? Tonko has a new opponent, and his major policy stand, according to the Times Union, is that he's against Obamacare. It still won't go away. You know, it's the law of the land.
Because you use what you got. That's what they think they've got.
It's effective. People
that's
have
what they. Well, I don't know that it's effective, but I think it's what they consider their best shot.
Mm-hmm. We are out of time. I want to thank everybody who took part. Thank you so much. And we'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, with thank new you. Coffee cups.
With new coffee cups. Hopefully the weather will cooperate and all will be well. We have a great show coming up. Dawn Upshaw will be next. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.